At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, where money is made simple. Let's get talking. Welcome, Money Buddies, to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and today we're talking all about how you can get started with your finances, except we're going to be talking about it from more of a planning and investing sort of angle. It can be really hard to get started with investing because it feels like all of your income is being stripped away by all the different expenses in our lives. So how can you get started on a simple and easy path to investing? What kind of tips can help you get just a little bit into your investment accounts? What type of account should you use? It does matter, and there is one account that we're going to be talking about today that will help you a lot when it comes to taxes, so be sure to stay tuned for that. We're also going to get into some great conversation around marriage and financial planning when you're just getting started before you may need a professional's help. Today's Money Buddy is TJ Van Gerven. TJ is a financial planner and founder of Modern Wealth Builders and the host of the podcast Do More With Your Money. After graduating from Virginia Tech, where he studied economics and actuarial science, TJ has spent his entire career in the financial services industry as a financial planner. TJ is passionate about helping millennials use money intentionally as a tool to build towards financial flexibility and independence. The money talking points for this week's episode are: what small things can you do to get started with investing? 2. How can you invest simply? And 3. What simple financial planning step can help your finances now? With the money talking points in mind, let's get talking. Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's interview on Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. Joining me today, I have TJ Van Gerven, and we're talking about what to do with your finances when you're young. We got some great tips and tricks lined up for today's episode. TJ, could you introduce yourself for everyone?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thank you for having me on the podcast. My name is TJ Van Gerven. I have a financial planning and wealth management practice called Memento Financial Planning that I started in 2018. My goal is to help millennials build towards financial flexibility so that they can take time off from work and then ultimately financial independence. So I started my practice from scratch in 2018 and just been really working to, you know, build up the client base and work with people I enjoy working with.
Yeah, that's awesome. Again, I'm excited for today's conversation because my audience is primarily young adults, and we're going to give them some great tips of how to actually manage your money when you're getting going. And hopefully we can talk about it beyond just a budgeting perspective and help them go beyond some of those tips and tricks. Let's start out today with maybe some of the common challenges that young adults face when they're starting out. How can young adults still save? Because it can be very hard because you feel like your expenses are high, your income's low when you're just getting started. How is it actually possible to still save?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a very unaffordable world that we live in right now. The boomers like to talk about how real estate's been their best investment, right? A lot of times millennials think like, oh, I really need to get into that real estate purchase, but this down payment is so massive, and given the interest rate environment, the affordability is very low. So the first thing I would say is be careful falling into the trap that you feel like you need to get into real estate. There are other ways that you can invest outside of that and still grow your net worth, right? The goal is that you want to be transferring your income that you're earning into assets that at least keep up with inflation, but ideally increase above inflation. This can be very difficult early in your career if you're not earning a lot. The thing I would say is be careful getting caught up too much in the technical stuff of what should I be investing in before you have an income that really allows you to live below your means. So can you invest in your skills so that you can increase your income? But I would say even if you're in a position where it feels tight and tough, you should know your numbers. I love a tool like Monarch Money, a Mint alternative if you've used Mint in the past, where you can have all of your accounts linked and just get a hold of your basic numbers, right? How much income is coming out? What are my total expenses, including things like taxes? What is my personal savings rate? The key is to be conscious first. Can you live below your means? That's the key. No matter what your income is, can you live below your means? It's very simple, but actually very difficult for a lot of people to do in practice.
Yeah, you're speaking to one of the things that I love teaching a lot about recently, and that's the power of data. How have you seen it in your life to be able to see some of that data or keep track of those numbers? How does that help you?
Yeah, I think it's easy to trick yourself. Even me as a financial professional, I review other people's data all the time, but I have to go back and audit myself as well. When you really go through your total income minus your total expenses, what is your actual personal savings rate? This includes lump sum stuff, right? If you have a vehicle purchase in that year, that's going to really cut into your personal savings rate. So basically, just understanding a 10% personal savings rate is a really good place to start, in my opinion. This is total income minus total expenses, including taxes. If you can get to that point, that allows you to have some discretionary income to go, okay, now can I start thinking about building a cash reserve, paying down high interest rate debt, and then ultimately investing. That's the end goal, right? So we can start that path towards financial independence.
Yeah, and you talk about finding that discretionary income. And one of the things I love to tell people is when you begin tracking those expenses, you're going to naturally find those things you can cut back on or those things you maybe didn't realize you were spending so much on. One of the stories I love to share is when I first started tracking my expenses back in high school, because I'm that big of a financial nerd. I've been doing this for a very long time. But I realized I was spending so much money eating out. And I told my friends this. I'm like, hey, did you guys realize I'm spending this much? You're probably spending just as much because we're all going out to eat together. And collectively, we were able to say, wow, that's crazy. Let's cut back on that. We were able to do it as a group. So just by having the power of a little bit of data, we were able to make a decision without feeling restricted. Because I think that's where people can get tripped up, as they say, oh, I don't want to cut back on this or that because I enjoy it. But then you realize how much you're actually spending. It makes it a whole lot easier. So data is a very powerful tool.
Absolutely. I like that story a lot. I think it's important to think about conscious spending in general, right? Where do you value? I'm someone that does value convenience and eating out a lot. And if I can save in other ways, so if you really value convenience and travel, spend your money in that category, but then be very frugal and intentional in other categories, like maybe your vehicle purchase or your home. If you can save money there, you have a lot more discretionary income.
And that's one thing that we were able to realize. We enjoyed eating out together because we got to hang out. So we cut back in other areas. So I like that. And the data helps make it super easy to understand that.
Absolutely.
What are some common mistakes, maybe beyond maybe not tracking your expenses, but what are some common mistakes people make when they're young and just getting started?
I would say overcomplicating things and also chasing very speculative type investments. I think because it's such an uphill battle, you know, the urge to purchase individual stocks, like the whole meme stock thing, or seeing the gains that are happening very quickly, it can be enticing to get in on that. But a lot of times you end up losing money because if it's already gone up, chances are, you know, you've missed that run. And then same with cryptocurrency as well. You know, all these super speculative cryptocurrencies, as far, you know, you experience rug pulls where you're investing in XYZ meme coin again, and then all of a sudden you lose all your money. So I think just being comfortable with the idea of the long term, the long vision of, can I benefit from compound interest? I think a lot of people don't understand compound interest and the growth you experience over long time frames if you can compound sustainably at a realistic rate of return. Mm-hmm. The hurdle seems so high that they feel like they need to take on exorbitant risk.
Yeah, which is, it's interesting from my perspective because I'm 26. I still have that long time horizon to invest. And I wish people would take a step back and give themselves maybe even just 3 years over my working at my latest job with my 401k, the last 3 years, half of the value in it now is growth and the employer match. 3 years isn't a long period of time. If people were to just give it some time before then you start feeling like you got to take these big risks or hit these big home runs, give it a shot. Give compound interest a shot to start working. Because I think I get it a little bit more, but maybe if you're older or feel like you're behind, people will feel like they have to take those risks. But I just wish young investors would realize that time is on your side, especially when you're starting out early. But you mentioned compound interest. How does it benefit those who are young?
If you really understand the math, I recommend getting comfortable with basic time value of money. For example, the rule of 72 is a nice rule of thumb. Many of your listeners are familiar where how long it takes to double at a certain interest rate. So if you have an expected return, let's say 8%, 72 divided by 8 is 9 years. If you're compounding at 8%, it takes 9 years to double your money. If you just think about over the course of your life, if you can double even three times in your earning career and you're saving that 10% or up, you know, let's say ideally 20% of your, you know, income that you're earning, that's going to snowball into a massive amount. If you look at the math, saving an extra 10 years earlier, how much actual less you have to put there to achieve the same amount later in life is astonishing. And again, until you play with some of the numbers and understand the basic time value of money, it's hard to really wrap around in your head.
Yeah, the time value of money is almost like the next step of the debt snowball, where you're building up the snowball to get to zero. And then once you get to zero, then it really starts getting big when you start to add time to it and let that snowball keep rolling. But let's talk a little bit about investing here. Why would a Roth IRA be a good option? People hear about IRAs, they might not know what they are. Why is Roth a good option for starting out early?
a lot of young investors can definitely benefit from a Roth IRA for a few different reasons. Number one, it is tax-free growth. So you put money into this account, you don't get an income tax deduction, which you do with traditional types of accounts. It's going in after tax. But then the great thing is that if you're investing for a long time frame, all of that growth, when you pull it out after age 59 and a half, is going to come out income tax-free. And so it is important to understand this basic concept that there are three different types of buckets of money. There's tax-free, this is the Roth account. There's pre-tax, this is like a traditional retirement account. And then there's taxable. That tax-free bucket is very valuable to you because we don't know the future of interest rates. You're probably going to be in a lower income tax bracket earlier in your career than you are later in your career. Also, tax rates may go up in the future. So this is a really good thing to take advantage of early. The other thing, it is more flexible than other types of retirement accounts. The money that you put in, the contributions that you make, you can actually always pull out penalty and tax-free. As a younger person, you may want that flexibility because I do see sometimes where people that are really good savers, they max their 401k, they max all these retirement accounts, but then they wish they had more flexibility with having money in like a brokerage account so they can maybe make a down payment on a home or something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility there. And then one definition real quick to make sure everyone understands. When you say a traditional investing account, that can get lost on people. Traditional is a designation similar to Roth. It's not like if you were to say, oh, what's a traditional? Is that like my parents? Like, is it an old school account? No, it's just a different designation. I don't know why we have to use these complicated words in front of already complicated things like IRA. Just call it something easier, but just to define it for people there, I think that's helpful.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. So an IRA is an individual retirement account. Anybody in the U.S. can open this account, right, regardless if they have a employer sponsor plan. And then the type of taxation is the traditional versus the Roth. You can have a traditional IRA and you can have a Roth IRA. And then depending on if you want the income tax deduction now or the tax-free growth, that's where you go Roth versus traditional.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's a perfect way to paint that. You mentioned right in the very beginning that it's an expensive world. People feel like they have to get into real estate or they can't afford groceries right now because things are so expensive. Do you have any tips to help people get that foot in the door with investing when it feels like everything is so expensive and money's being spent elsewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, the great thing is even though some things have continued to grow and become very expensive, right? Housing, education, healthcare, there are still things that, you know, technology has decreased costs in some areas of life and opened the barrier to entry. For example, commission-free trading is amazing. The fact that you can own the world stock market. So you're just owning the collective universe of all available stocks. And if you understand the long-term track history of that, that's a great long-term investment that honestly many professional money managers on Wall Street aren't going to outperform. And you can own that. You can invest $10 a week or $10 a month, whatever you can afford. The key is simply building that muscle and automating, right? So having the account open and just whatever you can afford to live below your means, just get in the habit of always be investing. And then the idea is as you're increasing your income, you're increasing what you're investing on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, I love that. And also, like, especially if you're doing a percentage based thing into your works 401k or something like that, it's naturally going to go up because 3% of your $1,000 paycheck is going to go up to 3% of your $1,200 paycheck with raises. I heard one tip recently where someone suggested if you do get that raise, also increase your percentage so that it's almost like you're not getting a raise. You can force your income to go to your 401k and keep living the same life you live. There's a great book I plug very often called The Automatic Millionaire, where he talks about that you're not going to miss that 1% or 2% as you gradually increase it. Your lifestyle can adjust from going up with raises. It can also adjust by staying the same or going down slightly. So if you use that to your benefit, you can really crank up that investing. I think that's where automation is such a big deal. A lot of 401ks have the ability to increase your percentage automatically over time. What do you think about automation? How can that help people with saving for retirement?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's an extremely valuable tool. There's a lot of things you can equate between personal finance and fitness, right? You have to put in the work on an ongoing basis to see that long-term growth. It's very hard if you're not automating these things because then you're not thinking about them. And you have so many decisions to make on an ongoing basis. If you can't have it automatically taken from your checking to your investment account, and then the trade has to be placed to be invested, that's a very crucial step as well. But just making sure that every part of that system is in place where it's commission-free trading. You can own the world's greatest companies for nothing. This is an amazing thing because, you know, even 30 years ago, 40 years ago, you might have been paying, you know, a 3.5-4% upfront commission every time you were purchasing a mutual fund with exorbitant fees on top. So you weren't even capturing the return of the stock market. This is an amazing thing. Even though we can't break into the real estate market as easily, our barrier to access to owning companies, which honestly are going to perform better than real estate in the long run, net of transaction costs and fees, that's an amazing thing.
Like you were just saying, that barrier to access is so much lower for putting $30-$50 into an S&P 500 index fund. It can be a whole lot quicker for you to just get started with that. And I do like what you mentioned about making sure your account's actually invested. My work does not have some sort of target date fund that's set up automatically to put your 401k contributions into. I worry about it often that so many people's 401ks are probably still sitting in cash at my employer. And that's going to be a rude awakening when they get to retirement and they only have $80,000 that could have been several hundreds of thousands of dollars if it was just invested in a simple fund.
100%. And that's such a simple thing that we take for granted, like just investing the cash. But that's the hard thing about investing sometimes. A lot of these things take low effort, but they're very crucial and very important. And investing in general is one area in life where more effort does not necessarily equate to better outcomes. The more you're playing with things, you actually might hurt yourself in the long run.
Let's talk a little bit about risk tolerance. Young investors, we say they have time. They can really just let it go and let it grow. How does that time impact what they should be choosing in terms of an investment and their level of risk?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the best things you can do for yourself early on is increase your financial literacy and understand expectations around investing so that you can increase your tolerance for risk. So a lot of times millennials, because of some of the financial trauma that they experienced with seeing their parents go through like 2008 environments, com bubble situation, you know, they're very risk averse. Even though I said before, a lot, there's some people that are taking crazy amounts of risk. There's also a lot of people that are very risk averse and they're holding on to more cash than they really need. One of the best things you can do is educate yourself on the risk reward characteristics of the investment strategy you're doing. And then understand, like you said, time is your ally here. It does start with personal finance fundamentals, right? Understanding your numbers, having a cash reserve in place so that you don't feel like you need to pull from your investment at any time. You do need to understand that even in years when the stock market is up, there's going to be in the year volatility of like 15%. So you're going to see your money go down 15% even when the stock market's up. You're going to have stock market crashes every 3 to 5 years, or definitely every decade, you're going to see a real bear market environment where the market's down 30%. So you have to understand that is part of investing. And you need to stay invested during those periods to benefit from it. And so really getting comfortable with a high stock allocation. If you're not living off your investment assets, I don't see a huge need for having a bond allocation.
Yes. Thank you for saying it. So many people think they need bonds and I'm like, you just don't. It's okay.
Honestly, even some retirees, just because of, I won't get into the specifics about the bond market, but if you have a strong cash reserve or if you have some level of fixed income from pension, social security, you still need a large stock position because you might live 30 years in retirement. The reality is if you look at bonds, they're actually losing money after inflation. And so getting comfortable with, I would say a world stock market index is really a great place to start because it's 60% US stock market, 40% international, and covers everything. And you're really giving yourself, like I said, you're going to probably outperform, you know, the majority of professional money managers on Wall Street, which is a crazy thing to think about.
Yeah. And we won't dive into it, but you and I probably have similar opinions about target date funds and outliving that money. So that's a great place to put it. I honestly tell people, why are you not in stocks? Own companies, like you said, a total market index fund or the S&P 500 index fund. Those are good starting places. One of the things I use to help calm people down, because maybe they're worried, oh, it's gambling, things like that. And I'm like, no, you're choosing all of the stocks in the world or the top 500. And if all that goes to zero, we have bigger problems than your portfolio, because that means every company is down to zero. There's huge problems if that's what's going on.
100%. That's a really pragmatic way to approach it. We're betting on the future growth of humanity, which I understand you can have your thoughts on that at times. But like, this is just basically, we have some historical data, right? We have like 100 years of data on this, which is, you know, a small sample size, but still a sample size. You're basically betting on the future of innovation, the future of capitalism. And I do think there are some other viable assets, but like you said, that's a great place to start.
I love that. That's fantastic. And we've mentioned a total world fund. We've mentioned an S&P 500 fund. Are there other funds that people should be looking at if they want to get into it more, or should they just stick with those basics?
I think it's important to make sure that you're getting the most on your cash, even though it may not be the most amount in the world. It's still good. For example, Fidelity has a high yield checking account where you can use their money market fund. You're getting short-term treasury bill rates. That's the best you're going to get on a cash alternative is whatever short-term treasury bill. So these are like 1 to 3 month treasury bills. I think they're paying about 4%. You want to always get that short-term T-bill rate on your cash because that's kind of that risk-free rate of return, mm-hmm. right? Where you're at least keeping up with inflation. So that's the first thing to consider. I do have some thoughts on Bitcoin as an asset class. I don't believe in cryptocurrency outside of that, but I do think it is worth considering the potential there as well.
Well, I'd love to hear maybe a little bit of your thoughts about Bitcoin, because speaking to young investors, I think that's even more on their mind of how do I invest in Bitcoin? Do I invest in it? Is it an investment? What are some of your thoughts initially around how people should think about it?
This has been a long journey for me. It's taken me a lot of time to get the courage and conviction to really say I have long-term conviction in it. I'm somebody who's like a cash flow guy, you know, where it's mm-hmm. like you want a company that produces cash flow, they redistribute it to shareholders. This is just a commodity, right? Think of it as digital gold. It's important to understand the origin story behind Bitcoin. It comes out in 2008, 2009. Why did it come out? Banks were taking money and irresponsibly lending it out. They lose the money. So basically, Satoshi Nakamoto, this pseudonym for the personal organization, creates the Bitcoin white paper, creates the blockchain technology where it's self-governing and there's a finite amount of it. And it's operated as designed since inception. I think the problem is that people took that technology and used it on other cryptocurrencies, but it doesn't have the same faith element, because the key here with Bitcoin is that we haven't heard from Satoshi since 2011. The personal organization walked away. They have the largest wallet worth billions of dollars that's never been accessed. And the idea behind that was this is kind of a gift to society to have a self-governing currency that cannot be manipulated by central banks. And it's a way for you basically can self-custody your asset. And so if you think of, you compare Bitcoin to gold, because gold has the original storage of value. Gold has a $20 trillion market cap. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin has about a $2 trillion market cap. Even if it took 30 years for Bitcoin to match the market cap of gold, it would still be a double-digit annualized return. I think it's a viable asset and worth considering having an allocation.
Perfect. Well, thank you for that quick background on it to help people maybe start thinking about it in terms of an investment versus gambling, because that maybe that's what other cryptocurrencies have made them think. Those rug pulls you mentioned where people are getting scammed out of the technology. So that's a good place for people to start thinking. They can always dive the rabbit hole a little bit deeper as they start looking up on it. But let's move into helping young adults, especially maybe if they're moving into marriage or even on their own, think about financial planning. We've talked a lot about investing, and that's just one piece of this whole pie. But what kind of conversations can people have when they start thinking about planning or moving into building a more broader picture about what they want to do with their money?
Yeah, I do work with a lot of young couples, and sometimes they transition from pre-marriage to marriage. And the thing is that just keep in mind, right? Once you're married, you're taxed as a joint unit. So both of your income sources, both of your investment assets, it's important to think through how can we be efficient as a household? When I'm working with an individual, I also want them to be tax efficient, thinking about over the course of their lifetime, when to make those pre-tax retirement contributions, mm-hmm. when to make those Roth contributions. What are you actually building towards? How do we pay for childcare, housing, all these different things? And so it's, again, the first thing is just getting organized and having awareness, understanding each other's basic assets, basic accounts. I do recommend people combine their finances and consider things mm-hmm. from a joint perspective. I think it works fine if you have one joint checking and then maybe individual checkings, but really trying to have that joint mindset. I think whatever works for you. I just find once you're taxed as a joint unit, combining just makes things a lot simpler. And then, really what I tell people when I'm working with them is ultimately you have to come to an agreement as a group of what the vision is that you want. But then once you have that vision, we can work together on like, how do we actually get there as fast as possible? And so maybe that for some people is trying to achieve work optional by a certain time frame, although I have some thoughts and feelings around that. Or just more of a linear path. We really just want to focus on making sure that we're set up for traditional retirement, that we can fully fund our kids' education costs, that we're not ever in a scenario where we lose peace of mind.
Yeah. And making sure you're set up for that traditional retirement is a great point to get to, because then you can speed it up. Like as you get bonuses or raises, or maybe your career takes a better path than you thought it would, and you can bring that time closer as to what feels comfortable. One of the things I love to teach about that I make sure my wife and I do is we have a written plan. We have our goals wrote down. We have timelines wrote down for things like that. We have our investment allocations written down. What do you think the value is in writing stuff down and making sure you're on the same page and it's put to paper?
Yeah, I think put to paper is great because it keeps you accountable and mm-hmm. also forces you to really have a vision. I love having a one-page snapshot for clients where we review at least annually of like basically what were the things that we had talked about? Did we actually accomplish those? What's really important to you now? Because it changes over time. And that's why, you know, this financial planning is so much bigger than the math behind it as far as the technical decisions, mm-hmm. because really what matters is what you want for yourself, what you want your life to look like on an ongoing basis. And that's an evolving thing that I'm still trying to figure out for myself. But hopefully, if I can figure it out for myself, I can help clients as well.
Yeah. How do people get that foundation in order? Like you mentioned, getting organized and getting started. How can people conceptually start to think about actually doing that?
I mean, I use tools within my practice, like planning platforms where we aggregate everything. Monarch Money is a great type of account to get financially naked with your partner, where you understand if they have debt out there, student loans, credit cards, what does their investments look like? What does their cash look like? Just having a basic understanding of all these numbers that are good to know as the individual, but then making sure that each partner has some baseline of financial literacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Having a good basic financial literacy foundation is great for both couples because it's very likely that one partner wants to manage the money and the other one tends to take a little bit more of a setback approach. But making sure you both still understand what's going on with dashboards, Monarch Money can offer you a dashboard as a quick view into your financial life. You like doing the deep dive and the other spouse likes looking at the general level and you can both do that. And I think that's great. But actually talking about it is super useful.
100%. And there's a lot of things that people overlook too. So there's different parts of financial planning. Like we focus a lot on the accumulation aspect, right? Are we saving enough? Are we investing strategically? Are we thinking about tax planning? But there's also the risk side of the equation, right? What are some of the risks that can get in the way? Even if you have everything set up, you're on track to financial independence, but thinking through what happens if one of you or both of you were to die prematurely? Do you have term life insurance to cover you enough? Disability, if your income is still one of your largest asset early in your work career, thinking about like, what does your actual employer coverage look like? Because people are so shocked when I show them what their employer coverage actually covers versus what they think it covers. And this can be financially devastating through liability as well. If you were to get sued for various things, do you have just basic things like umbrella insurance? So you also want to consider the risk side of the equation, especially when you're bringing in a partner and definitely a dependent.
Yeah, people can be super risk averse from investing in the stock market, but then they don't have disability insurance or life insurance. It's a double-edged sword that you got to make sure you're looking at all parts of the equation. Like you mentioned with work, it's likely your work only gives you $50,000 worth of insurance for tax reasons. That's not going to be enough to get you anywhere if the worst were to happen. So look at your risk situation in the stock market, but make sure you're actually considering your income side of the equation too.
Risk comes in various forms and people can overlook a lot of these risks. And also the thing that I would consider too is like, you know, things like health insurance. Both partners have access to health insurance. Maybe one person has superior one and you should both be on that. Do you have access to a health savings account? Are you comfortable with this level of deductible? If you're planning on having children, maybe you should switch from the high deductible plan to the lower deductible plan. These are all decisions worth sitting down and talking through.
Yeah. And just start writing them down as you're thinking of these questions in a note on your phone or some sort of a Google Doc. I think the one thing that stresses people out is they feel like they have to answer all these things right now. Like they're listening to this episode thinking, I got to go figure all this out. You have plenty of time to figure this out. Just like you have time for your stocks to invest and grow. You do have time to figure this out. Write them down and then start doing some research. Take a deep breath. Don't feel like you have to do everything we just mentioned all at once.
Yeah, this is a lot. When I work with people, it takes a whole year to get through all these things. Part of it is just life. Like you said, life comes at you and it's going to take time. It took me a while just to get my basic estate plan documents done because I was putting off the notarization. And I figured out you could just go to notarize.com, request some witnesses, and it took all of 20 minutes. But it was still the process of getting over the fact of I got to sit down for 30 minutes and answer these questions. These are crucial things. Check off your list so that you do have more peace of mind. Because ultimately, what's the point? Most people want to focus on their life. They don't want to have to worry about all this stuff, right? These are things that they have to do or should do. But once they're done, then it's just get back to enjoying life.
Yeah. I'll confess, my wife and I, we haven't finished setting up our will or anything like that yet because it's on our list. It's on our agenda of things to do this year. Like you said, you have to sit down and commit to it for some period of time. So definitely. Let everyone listening take a deep breath. Even the podcast host you're listening to doesn't have it all figured out yet. So take a deep breath and realize you got plenty of time. But TJ, this has been fantastic. I've learned a lot talking through this with you. I'm sure all of our listeners have as well. I have two final questions for you. First, where can people learn more about you or contact you? But the second one, to give you a second to think about it, is what's one thing you wish you would have known sooner when it came to starting your financial journey? But first, how can people find you?
Yeah, first, so Memento mementofinancialplanning.com. You can learn everything there. I also have a podcast called Do More With Your Money, available wherever you stream. I consider myself a solo entrepreneur. So I think a lot of times personal finance is a little different if you're going the entrepreneurial route, because you really have to reinvest in yourself. So, you know, I would say for me is just kind of overcoming the scarcity mindset that I have. I think it's part of why I became a financial planner is because my dad talked to me about money so much growing up. He came from poverty. So for me, it was like, I took a very profit first mentality, which is safer because you're always kind of like making sure you increase your income before you increase your expenses. But it's definitely held me back in ways where I didn't reinvest aggressively enough. And I'm getting to that point now where I feel comfortable to reinvest, but it's just overcoming that scarcity mindset. So just be honest with yourself about how you grew up with money, because your experiences growing up really shape the person that you become. And it's good to just be aware of that and audit it.
Yeah. A fun money talking point for anybody to ask friends or family is, what's your first money memory? Because that starts to go into how you were raised with money, how you inherited some money beliefs. But TJ, this has been fantastic. I've learned a ton, and thank you so much for coming on.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you to TJ for coming on this podcast interview. That was fantastic, wasn't it? What did you think? Be sure to let me know, send me an email or comment on my website or on Spotify, but let me know what you thought about that interview. But I thought it was fantastic. But let's get into the money talking points today. The first money talking point is, what small thing can you do to get started with investing? Well, go open a Roth IRA right now and set it up with an automatic $10 investment. $10 a month, you should be able to do that. Consider it a subscription to your future. Even though that's not enough for you to retire on, it's enough to get you started, but make sure the money is actually invested. Go look up one of my episodes about simple investing with index funds, or like we talked about in the interview today, start with an all-world index fund or an all-total stock market index fund. Just get started, and then it becomes so much easier. It's unreal how much easier it becomes. It's not hard at all to get started. It's easy to open the account, and it's easy to choose your investments. The effort is all required in actually getting started. And once you do, it's such a huge relief because now the account's open. You just got to keep simply putting money in there and keep investing it. Automation is key. I haven't done an episode on automation in a while. I should do a refresher one soon. So if you're listening to this and you love automation, or you found a new way to use it in your finances, let me know and maybe you can come on the show, or we can talk about it in a little more detail and we can do a refresher episode on automation. One thing you'll want to make sure to do is avoid FOMO. Your FOMO buying is giving those great returns right over to the people that are bragging about them on social media. So when you see someone posting a screenshot of their 100% return on some crypto coin or some random stock, you going and purchasing that is giving future people those same returns. So be careful buying into FOMO, and if it's not a part of your plan, stay away from it. But remember, track, and track some more. We'll talk about this in the last money talking point, but next let's talk about how you can invest simply. When I say invest simply, I mean something like a Total World, an S&P 500, or a Total US fund. Avoid bonds if you're young, because honestly you just don't need them. You can grow your money over a long period of time using some sort of simple, low-cost index fund. Consider a Roth IRA for tax-free growth that allows you to grow over a very long time period, and then when you pull it out, you don't have to worry about any sort of taxes. Because let's be frank, taxes suck. Who wants to pay them? M1 Finance is a great, simple company that you can invest with, where you can set it and forget it, and you just keep plugging money in there. And speaking to automation, you could set it up with your direct deposit at your work to send money to your M1 Finance account, and then it would automatically invest it in your asset allocation, and theoretically you would never have to check the account, similar to how a 401k works. So you could set up a direct deposit IRA, is maybe what I would like to call it there, with M1 Finance, and send your direct deposit money straight there. But timing the market, it's impossible. Not only do you have to guess the perfect time to sell, but you also have to guess the time to buy all perfectly. So just keep it simple. Just keep plugging money in there into a simple index fund and keep it simple. Don't try to complicate things, because it's just not worth it. You're not going to beat your returns unless you're a seasoned pro or you get really, really lucky. But give your account a few years to work. My work 401k has only been open for a few years, but it has grown a ton. And that's thanks to the employer match and compound interest. I've mentioned before, but half of the account's value is growth and the employer match. So my money essentially has doubled. It's received a 2x return because of employer match and growth from the stock market. So consider that when you're thinking about investing in your 401k. Keep it simple. Put it in an S&P 500 fund or a large company fund if your 401k has that, and make sure to keep it simple and just keep plugging money into it. But let's talk about the third money talking point here, which is, what simple financial planning step can help your finances now? I got two main ones that I think help my finances a ton that I'd love to share with you. The first one is organizing your finances. tracking assets, tracking your debts, tracking your cash flow. You can do this with apps or spreadsheets. I love spreadsheets because I honestly believe manually tracking things is more powerful for your mental energy to be thinking about it often so that you have more of a pulse on your personal finances. Whereas apps, I tend to let it just go automatically in the background and I never check it. So then what good does it do me? Whereas a spreadsheet, I have to check it by putting things in. Get started with this today. Tracking is a huge deal. It makes simple decisions like which categories to cut back in or which categories to ramp up your spending or cut back your spending. Makes it very easy and almost automatic because you don't feel restricted because the data is empowering you to make a decision because you can begin to see exactly where you should withdraw from and pull back from when it comes to spending and where you can say, yeah, I do enjoy spending in that category, so I don't want to give it up. When you have a whole visual picture of your personal financial situation, you're able to make those decisions easily and you feel in control instead of feeling restricted, which so many people do when it comes to trying to use a budget. So that's why I think you need to get ahead of it first with tracking. It'll help you realize where you are okay with spending money and where you know you need to cut back. The second thing in this money talking point of a simple financial planning step to do is prioritize emergency saving and long-term investment strategies. Get the foundation under you with an emergency fund. That way you don't have to worry so much. Emergency funds turn what are emergencies into minor inconveniences. They turn them into not that big of a deal and make it a whole lot easier to deal with. One of my favorite budgeting tips and tricks is to budget on last month's income. And that almost gives you an automatic emergency buffer when your paychecks are coming in and you don't care about them. They're just sitting there. You're not so worried about paying your next rent charge or paying the credit card bill, hoping there's no late fee because you're paying it a day late because your paycheck's coming in a day late. You don't have to worry about that at all if you're budgeting on last month's income. And I just recently did an episode about budgeting tips and tricks. So go listen to that one because in there is a detailed way to get to a point where you can budget based on last month's income. But let me know if you budget on last month's income and how that helps you out. The next thing that I like to do as you're prioritizing your savings and your long-term strategies is write it all down. That way when you get money or you get some extra money, like a tax return, because tax season's coming up, right? You've probably already filed it or you're about to. If you get a tax return, writing down your goals beforehand can make it very easy to plug in that refund right into your next goal. It makes it super easy to feel like you're on track. You're staying up with your goals because you know, here's my short-term to long-term goals. If I can meet these short-term goals faster, that frees up cash flow for me to be able to invest in those long-term goals. Or you can put your money into those long-term goals because then it has more time to compound and grow. So there's a couple different ways you can look at that. But when you don't have them written down, how do you know where you're going to throw your money? But when you have it written down, you know exactly where you can put that extra little bit of change that you find or you get through a tax refund or maybe a bonus at work. Those sort of little bits of extra income are so easy to plug in when you have a written plan. So my recommendation here is to go back and listen to the episode that I did about the written investment plan and the written plan because I talk about it a lot, but I do have a specific episode about it. So go back and check that out. But that does it for today's episode. I hope you all enjoyed this. I know I sure did as I enjoyed the interview and being able to learn a lot from TJ. Be sure to check out TJ's information in the show notes. And thanks again to TJ for coming on the show and helping us learn how to get started with investing. What were you able to take away? Head over to the show notes and send me an email or contact me on my website. I'd love to hear from more and more listeners. I hope you are all able to take away the next simple step that you need to do in your investing journey, whether it's getting started and opening that first Roth IRA or writing down your goals so you exactly know what to do with your next sum of cash you run into. There are a lot of great steps and things we covered throughout this entire episode, and we have some more great episodes in the pipeline, so be sure to subscribe because you won't want to miss it. Also, please consider sharing with a friend. It goes a long way in helping the show grow. And please consider having a money talk with them about one of the money talking points from today's episode, because these are always meant to spark conversation and help you break down these topics into simple, tangible talking points. But thank you for listening to today's episode. The best way to stay up to date and connected with all things Money Talk is to subscribe to the podcast and sign up for my email list. Head over to moneytalkwithskylarfleming.com and submit your name and email right there on the homepage. You can also use the contact page on my website to send me any questions. If you're looking to get started with budgeting, I've partnered with My Budget Coach, a platform that connects your budget directly with your financial coach. I'd love to work with you over there and help you with budgeting. The link, of course, is in the show notes. Remember, the best way to learn from today's episode is to go and have a money talk about it with a fellow money buddy. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on EGO to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop EGO today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.